You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5, brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight, download the new Sport Clips haircut app, and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What do you make of reports that the Cubs would prefer to have Addison Russell play shortstop and move Javi Baez around the infield? And would you do that?
Yeah, this is a wildly unpopular thing I'm about to say, but I would do it. I do think it's the best their team could be. I think that Javi can play. Javi's their best defensive player who could win a gold glove at about 3 or 4 different positions, and give him time and probably be all of them. I just think he's an amazing talent, and I understand leave him where he's at, don't mess with him, but I don't think it messes with him. I think he can. I honestly think that Addison Russell, if you have made this decision to bring him back and you've made this decision to play him, then you ought to play him at the position that he's best at. And he's not a guy that helps you a lot moving around the diamond. He is a guy that plays a really good shortstop, and the defensive metrics do say that he is a better shortstop than Javi, even though the eyeball test would tell you that Javi's the best shortstop around, and don't mess with it. But when you have two shortstops in your infield, you are a better team. And I don't know I think Javi can play second base like a shortstop. I don't think Addison Russell can. I think Addison Russell's best position is shortstop, and I don't think he can play many other positions. I think you're kind of wasting him. Why even have him up? You might have better options. But when he's at shortstop and Javi is at second, they become a different team. And you could also play one of your second basemen and have Javi play third, and you can move Chris Bryant into the outfield, or you can move him to first base at different times. I know this is an unpopular opinion. If you're going to have Addison Russell on the team, you should play him at the position that he's best at. And Javi, I don't think he's going to fall apart if you start moving him around the infield. Again, maybe I'm punishing him for his versatility, but I love that guy. I would move that guy all over the place. I would play him wherever I wanted to. I'd move him around. I'd do whatever I felt was best on a given day, and I would probably leave Addison Russell at shortstop.
Okay, the context why we're discussing this, Carl Ravitch, ESPN, who was in town over the weekend, was on ESPN Radio yesterday.
He said that this is being discussed
internally, according to people we've talked to. Now, whether it was an off-the-record conversation or not, we don't know, but he said it. And so you think that this is a guy that was around the team and going to be around the team because the Cubs are on ESPN again next Sunday night. This is going to be a topic. I'll tell you what I think, and I'll tell you what I predict, because they're two different things. I think that there's something to this, because if there wasn't anything to this, Addison Russell wouldn't be on the major league roster. He has no use. I don't think they look at him as second baseman. For whatever reason, they have fallen in love with the defensive metrics. They can talk themselves into October baseball being different, and you need a defensive presence, and that's what he gives you, and you're better with Javi moving around. I think that if they didn't believe this, that they would have probably tried Addison Russell at second base during spring training. There are things that they would have prepared for differently. They internally likely believe Addison Russell will be a shortstop, the everyday shortstop perhaps, down the road this season, and Javi will move around like he's used to moving around. That said, I think it's a terrible idea. I think personally, I wouldn't move a guy who's on playing at an MVP level. He's batting fourth. He's playing shortstop. He is one of the best players in baseball. You are one of the best teams, if not the best team in baseball over the last 3 weeks. I don't know why you would tinker with that. I don't know why you would change everything.
Can you be better? Can you be better?
That's what you got to constantly ask yourself. You have to ask yourself that, Mully, but I don't know why you would rearrange everything that's going so well for a guy who has let you down in Addison Russell. You're changing your entire operation for this guy? He looks overmatched at the plate. I don't know how he gets back to that level. I think it's a bad idea, but I think it's going to happen.
I am 100% on the same page as Mully's very, very unpopular opinion, and that is that you do put Addison Russell at short.
Mark Grody, everybody! Yeah!
Play the music!
What's up, Grody?
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Mark. Always a joy.
You guys, the place looks great. I love the construction.
We're really fixing it up for you.
I know. No, it looks great. The hallways are wonderful.
We should have, if we'd known, we'd have swept.
It is awfully dusty here in the update studio.
It's good, just inhale it.
I would. Ooh, I just got a little buzz. Nice. Look, Joe Maddon has always been transparent about this. I bet if they ask him tonight about this, he'll say, yeah, we would ideally, the ideal defense for the Cubs is putting Javier Baez where they feel the baseball is going to go the most throughout a night. They have always said that. And when the Cubs defense was at their best, it was Javier Baez roving about the infield, whether it was playing third base, shortstop, or second base. You want to put Javier Baez where the baseball is going to go the most because he is your best infielder. So it's as simple as that to me. It's not necessarily, well, Addison Russell is a better shortstop and Addison Russell needs to be there because he's Addison Russell. It's more the other part that Javier Baez needs to be the best. Defense for the Cubs needs to play all about the infield. It's not like the old days where it's like he's a utility infielder where they're just trying to find a place for. They really want Baez at multiple positions. So I am pro this move if the story is true.
Welcome back, Grody. You're wrong.
Get out of here, all.
Yeah, I think we're split 50% here, and by God, Dustin's going to have to break the tie because I agree with David.
Of course you do.
Well, David's wrong.
David and I are both wrong, apparently, but I agree with Mr. Haw here. I mean, 2016, we can hark back to that forever and always look back at what that team did in that specific year, but that was a long time ago at this point. Javi Baez of 2016 sure as hell is not the Javi Baez that he is right now, and neither is Addison Russell. He's had shoulder problems. He's had foot problems. He's got a ton of problems offensively right now, David. Like you brought up, he's been abysmal at the plate. He can't hit anything. Well, he can't hit a baseball. But I think that you have so many better options there. If you leave your best defender, your most dynamic defender at the most important position in the infield, and you kind of set around that, I think you're going to be better off whether you go with Descalso or Bodie or Zobrist when he's back around. I think those are all better options, certainly offensively, than Addison Russell, and I don't think you're going to lose too much defensively. Maybe with Zobrist because he's a little advanced in his age, but I think with Bodie, you're getting just as good of a defensive player at second base than you would be with Addison Russell. That frees up Brizzo to play at the corners and then whatever you need to do in the outfield. So I'm not buying this as a good idea. I think it is kind of one of those things. If it ain't broke, you don't fix it. I'm not really sure what Addison Russell, what they're expecting him to do at this point and try to reinvigorate life in a team that's already playing really well. It just seems very unnecessary to me.
Well, I don't believe that the plan was ever to play Addison Russell at second base. If it was the plan, then why in the world wasn't he out there during spring training? Theo Epstein told this show last week that's entirely up to Maddon. Maddon is completely in charge of who plays where, but the organization is behind this current setup, meaning Javi Baez at shortstop and Russell at second base. Listen, I also truly believe that the only reason Addison Russell got called up when he got called up is because Descalso couldn't do anything but pinch hit, okay? And Zobrist had to walk away, and we still don't know what's going on there. Otherwise, I think he'd still be down in the minors, and maybe he'd be taking ground balls at second base. Okay, he doesn't look right. I'm glad he didn't get that moment on Saturday. I'm like, oh boy, I hope he does not get this walk off when he came up at one point.
I thought the same thing. I had the same thought, Dustin.
Doesn't get his redemption right, because that would have, unfortunately, that would have wiped the slate clean with many, many, many baseball fans and Cubs fans. I'm just telling you that would have absolutely wiped the slate clean. Mully, I agree with you to the point that I think Javi Baez is good enough to overcome any of this, but it doesn't make any baseball sense. Meaning, you know, the guy to my right the two guys that were going to have the biggest regression this year for the Cubs were Javi Baez and John Lester. How are they doing, Kevin? Okay, they were going to be the two biggest regressors on the Cubs. No
you're
way.
Doing so what? You're agreeing with Kevin, Dustin. Keep it going. Don't.
Okay, no way they could repeat this. Okay, you don't mess with success.
You're going to come at me about being wrong. You are more wrong more often than anybody else on this damn
station. Hey, you both have regressed. You both regressed. The both of you.
The damn show is regressed.
Since the last time I came here, you guys are not living up to projections.
I could take a victory lap in my jock strap down Lakeshore Drive. I couldn't be more right on those two things.
Wow.
Which are more important than anything.
I'm alarmed, Molly.
Right.
Someone called 911.
I need an adult.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very
shirts
hard.
In, jocks tight, Bears. Socks tall.
The White Sox announced on Monday that Carlos Rodon, Nate Jones, and Mikel Adolfo were all ruled out for the rest of the season. Which of these injuries is the most disturbing?
Well, I think we expected the Nate Jones news. I think we certainly expected the Carlos Rodon news, even though it was so bad. Mikel Adolfo may be disturbing because he had the major surgery and now he's got to clean it up and miss another season. So he's got injury prone sort of stamped on his jersey. I think, though, it is Carlos Rodon because he is such a big part of this process and this rebuild, if you will. And you look at some of the overarching questions that this raises by having one of your guys who is a potential ace of this staff. I think that's the way we refer to him at times. Having Tommy John surgery, can he come back? You start looking at the numbers. Bill James Online says of 94 players, 28 years or younger, 43 came back and saw their velocity increase. You're going to have to look at some of these type of realities. 25% of major league pitchers now have had Tommy John surgery. It's not as unusual as it used to be. That said, you can assume nothing now moving forward. You don't know what kind of pitcher you're going to get when he returns the second half of the 2020 season. And so you begin to ask yourself, is this rebuild really about pitching? It started that way. It started that way because the Sox had all of these pitching prospects, and you thought, okay, this is the way they're going to go about it. They're going to be the Mets. This is the process. Take a step back. Look what's really going on. Are the White Sox excited about the future because of their pitching prospects? I don't know if that's the case anymore. And if that's not the case, then are you as excited about the rebuild? When you have injuries like this, you start to ask these kind of questions. So I think when Rodon, the reality sets in and it's unfortunate and you feel bad for the guy and you feel bad for the Sox, but that to me is probably the most disturbing element because it forces you to ask all the questions that you didn't necessarily feel like you had to ask before.
Okay, so Carlos Rodon, I mean, this is obviously the worst of all the injuries because of where you drafted him and what you expect from him and his contract status. He's basically going to come back in a year and a half for a year and a half, and who knows how long. Nate Jones is kind of a rumor, you know? Nate Jones is like one of those guys that was hanging around the Bears facility forever. You know, I can't think of...
Arise Curry?
Yeah, like, who was the fullback? There are guys you'd be like, oh, my God, they drafted that guy like 6 years ago. What's he still doing here? Nate Jones, he's just been hurt, and he's just been unavailable.
Reynolds.
Yeah, that's the guy I was thinking of. J.D. Reynolds.
The fullback from Oklahoma.
Yeah, like, wait, that guy's still here. I thought he left. What?
Hello, Harvey Unga.
Nate Jones. When I heard Nate Jones Unga. Was down, I thought, oh, is he still around? I didn't think. And then it's like, well, you know, he could have pitched his last pitch for the White Sox. Who would notice? It's just he's been hurt his entire career. So I don't get worked up about Nate Jones. He's just another name to throw in. But Rodon is obviously the most serious one. The one that was a bridge too far for me was Mikel Adolfo. I just, you know, he had like a big power explosion. And then it was like, he and Aloy and I can't think, was it Louis Robert? It was like they had this outfield of the future and the three of these guys were coming up in And ever since then, he's been having Tommy John or elbow surgery or something else. So
it's like ever since they took that picture with Aloy and Luis Robert. Yeah,
and it's like that, you know, whenever the young guys go down, I'm like, he blew his Achilles out again? How does the second Achilles happen? You know, and that's how I feel about, he just had Tommy John, his elbow. What are they doing with his elbow? It makes me scream at a high pitch.
Whose voice is that?
I don't know.
Who are
that's
imitating?
That's my alarmed okay. White Sox fan voice.
That's alarming, too. That's almost as alarming as Dustin Rhodes' jockstrap.
Like, It does. It turns me into a higher pitched squealer than I already am. And I just hate when a young guy gets hurt. It's obviously Rodon's the only one that matters, but throwing this Mike Rodolfo news in on top of everything else just seems like you're going to make a guy sing soprano, and kick to the nether region will do that, apparently.
I think it's I'm most disturbed by Carlos Rodon, because this kind of clinches it for me with Rodon in terms of what his existence is going to be in Major League Baseball, and it's going to be injured. 2016, the wrist. Last year, he starts the season on the 60-day disabled list. I mean, he's only 26 years old, but he has the feel of a guy who's been around forever already, and that's a bad thing. Like, I was very excited about Rodon this year and what he might become, and would he finally live up to where he was drafted by the White Sox, and it doesn't hurt that he's a lefty. All of it looked good, and I thought this is the year he's gonna become that. It started to look like it early in the season, and now this. So I'm most disturbed by Rodon, because I think this is what he is, and I'm not convinced that you'll see him pitching with the White Sox ever again.
Well, they said he's going to be back next year.
Wow. We'll see. Well, might they trade him? I mean, don't
teams
you think
beating
that,
down the door for a guy with how many arm surgeries under his belt?
I'm just saying, like, why would this version of the White Sox, a team that is rebuilding and looking to be good, keep a guy around like that? Like, what good does he do you? And that's why it's disturbing.
What are you
because
get
I've
for
come
him,
to that
player to be named later.
It doesn't even matter. It's give somebody right. else a chance in the rotation. I'm
you
not just, saying
your insurance premium goes down, Kevin.
I'm not talking about like, oh, you're going to get something for him. I'm just saying, like, you have to develop other pitchers and sign other guys who you can count on now and in the future if this White Sox team is to be something in the next few years. It sucks, but that's the way I feel.
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm particularly disturbed by any of these. I mean, Carlos Rodon at this point, is injured every single year, just 7 starts this year, 20 the year before that, 12 the year before that. So even though Rick Hahn has said that they do project him to be back in the second half of next season, I understand why many would be skeptical of that, but you expect it at this point with him, and you expect it with Nate Jones. With Mike Rodolfo, you know, his second elbow surgery, it's a little disconcerting, but he's never really put up huge numbers above a single A level anyway. I don't know how much hope I'm investing in a player that is really raw, that doesn't really play a position defensively, that apparently can't stay healthy as well. So I don't know that. I mean,
and can no longer throw.
And can't throw the baseball, which I hear is a problem in this particular sport. People were burning down Twitter, you know, crying and moaning yesterday about this. And everybody's like, oh, my God, texted me like, oh, are you all right? I'm just like, I don't care about any of this. None of this really in the grand scheme of things or even in the current iteration of the White Sox right here really affects me that much, either because I think that Mike Rodolfo is so far away that it's not even worth really talking about, and with Rodon and Jones, like you said, they're hurt every year anyway.
Right, so trade them.
I'm more concerned with, you know, the Cuban Adam Dunn that they're putting out there and Yonder Alonso every single day. That's absolutely a black hole in your lineup that has no business being on a major league roster. You know, that's more of a concern for me right now, is seeing trash like that put out there than, you know, pitchers that can't stay healthy.
You know, I thought this was over with. I mean, if you're going to, what to be upset about, if you do believe, and I don't, I'm with Mark. I made this comment. I said a week or two ago that Carlos Rodon has thrown his last pitch. Thank you, Ricky Renteria, for throwing him 3 consecutive games of over 100 pitches. I blame you for that, by the way. He has made his last pitch as a Chicago White Sox. I do believe that. I mean, these other two guys, I had to ask Kevin, I'm like, who is Mike Rodolfo? I mean, I don't watch single A baseball. I live in Chicago. There's a really professional baseball team to watch. I don't watch single A White Sox.
Why inform yourself on the thing you do for a living?
Yeah, that would just get in the way.
Kevin, there's a thing called hockey and college sports and horse racing, all other things we do for a living.
Horse racing's okay. Huge, yeah.
It is. Just wait till Friday when we have 3 guests breaking down the Preakness.
I'm calling off that day.
3?
Let's hope.
Jesus. Wait, Dave, that's
Jesus.
News to David.
Some of us have to invest.
David was listening right there.
3? Okay.
What kind of question is that?
It's not all about you. It's about our bankroll.
I got a trifecta to make.
In his first ranking following the major player procurement times, veteran sports writer Peter King ranks the Bears 9th in the NFL and 5th in the NFC behind the Rams, Saints, Niners, and Eagles. Do you agree? Should the Bears feel dissed, and will it make them angry, motivated, or have no impact at all?
We were talking about this amongst ourselves yesterday when the rankings came out, and I got to say, I mean, shouldn't the Bears be behind the Rams, the Saints, and the Eagles? I think that's fair. I think putting them fourth in the NFC
that's fair.
Is fair.
They lost to them.
But yeah. The one that would bother you would be San Francisco. And, you know, you have to wonder if that's a nod to John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan from a guy that gets to sit in their draft war room and, you know, and listen to Ryan Pace, you know, frantically try to trade up. So, I don't know. Does that affect his opinion of the Bears? Does it affect his way of viewing the Niners? Look, it's a preliminary ranking. I hope the Bears feel dissed. I hope they do. I hope they feel like they have something to prove. You know, the fact of the matter is that the Niners are coming back with their quarterback, right? Jimmy Garoppolo should be back. They add some pretty high draft picks, including Nick Bosa, and they went out and got D Ford. Their defense should be significantly better with the improvements they've made up front. They could be a team that takes a step. I look at the Bears, and I don't know why, but it seems like Vegas doesn't think a hell of a lot of them. It seems like everybody keeps begging you to bet the over. It seems obvious that they're good enough to win 10-plus games, so why is their number at 9.5? It just makes you suspicious. When someone wants me to bet the over, I'm the contrarian in me wants to bet the under. And I think that line is established to make you bet the over, which makes you want to bet the under. So all of a sudden they're a 9-win team. So maybe there's more teams that are better than them. I think this will have no impact, but I think it's the sort of thing that you should use to motivate your team, that you're being dissed, that people don't respect you, that they think last year was a fluke. And always in the NFL, circle the wagons and try to create that culture of everybody against us, and the guys in this locker room are the only ones who believe, even when you're winning Super Bowl after Super Bowl. I mean, you hear Tom Brady talk about it every year.
Yeah.
It's just
he's Tom Brady.
It's part of the mentality need to be in the league.
This is terrific fodder for a team who's fighting complacency or worried about it. And Matt Nagy said that because, heck, I read this yesterday and I got fired up, and I'm not a fan and I'm not a Bear. But I saw that, I'm like, are you kidding me, Peter King? I have so much respect for Peter King.
He's got the Colts third.
I know, the Colts are third. They draft well. They at least were in the playoffs. The 49ers were 4-12. 4-12, Mully. And he's got them as the seventh best team ahead of the Bears? Okay, you in our little exchange yesterday said maybe it's because of Jimmy over Mitch. I'll give you that. Maybe if you want to say Garoppolo's going to have a better year than Mitch Trubisky, I'll give you that. What are you defensively? You're adding pieces. You've got Nick Bosa. You've got D Ford. You've got DeForest Buckner. You want to be as good as the Bears defense. That's what you want to be offensively.
How is the Bears defense going to be with a new coordinator?
Well,
the talent level doesn't change.
I think that's a great question, but I think it's going to answer itself. Look, they change coordinators. They didn't change talent. They don't change personnel.
Right.
They
got
better personnel-wise.
Yep.
They're deeper. They're better. They're more experienced. Now they have probably something to prove. I don't get this whole thing. I love these lists. They're great sources of debate. But you lost me, Peter King, when you put the 49ers at 7. Respect everything you do, but I don't know what you're doing. Seeing that, a 4-12 team becoming a top 10 team next year, that's a heck of a leap.
How many quarterbacks did they roll out last year? 4? I mean, I think that's the answer. He's saying that last year was a fluke for them because of the Garoppolo injury.
It's giving Kyle Shanahan as much credit as Kyle Shanahan has always gotten in the league, and I think is probably... If his name were Bill Smith, I don't know that Kyle Shanahan would have been giving all of these opportunities because he hasn't had that good of a run as a head coach. And the 49ers are all about potential, not about production.
If you're picking the NFL, though, Haw, don't you have to take a leap on some team like every year, because it happens every year where a team goes last to first, or from worse or from either way. I mean, Jacksonville sucked last year; they were great the year before. The Bears sucked 2 years ago; they were 12-4 last year.
I suppose.
So I guess if you're picking the NFL,
okay,
yeah, Duval, you gotta pick a team like that, and I guess like San Francisco was a fancy pick last year to, you know, maybe do some damage. So now that they're supposedly going to be healthy and they do have talent, maybe that's why it is. All right, so I do think the Bears are being placed properly if the Bears are in on people's lists more towards 10 in a top 10, because it's going to be really hard for the Bears to follow up 12-4 from last year just based on the schedule, if nothing else. You know, they play those teams like Saints and the L.A. Rams. They play both L.A. teams. They play Philadelphia. They play Dallas. They play the teams in their division, obviously. So I just think it's going to be really hard to follow
they
up.
They play the Vegas team in London.
That's right. And I'm going to London, Molly. You're going to have to give me all your London secrets.
I may go with you.
Please do. I have never been.
Can I come?
Absolutely,
no.
Z-Pack.
Oh, Molly said but no.
Oh, I mean, you can go.
Molly said no.
With us.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd actually prefer that.
Oh, no, you can go, of course.
We're just a couple of blokes heading over to London.
Grody, you've already got the words down.
Yeah, see? Rubbish, you know?
It's less the Bears being ranked where they are as much as it is behind the 49ers, I think.
Yeah, it is strange. There's no doubt about it.
But, David,
yeah.
Would you feel better about it if you adapted what Mark is saying here? And you said the Bears are going to be – that Bears are behind Rams, Saints, Eagles, and mystery team, which Peter says is going to
possibly.
Be the Niners.
Yeah. Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that's what he's going for. You got to – if you're picking the NFL, you got to go out on a limb with somebody, and that's the team he's going on the limb with.
Boy, so. That's a hell of a limb, though. 4-12 last year for the San Francisco 49ers. I get it. The quarterback was out most of the year. And little nepotism baby Kyle Shanahan's going to get every opportunity handed to him, David. Like you said, I just think it's a really big leap to put them that high in this ranking in the NFC. I have no problem with the Bears being behind Los Angeles, New Orleans, or Philadelphia. That makes sense to me, especially with questions surrounding Mitch Trubisky that I still have. I think Garoppolo, I'd rather have Jimmy Garoppolo than Mitch Trubisky right now. But I'm not sure of the supporting cast, not sure of the defenses, how they match up with one another. I think San Francisco will take a leap forward here, but putting them that high in the NFC coming off a four-win season, little far-fetched for me.
I've never been out of the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Ever. You're kidding.
I needed to say that out loud.
Is that do you have a passport and everything?
I do have a passport.
And you just never left the country?
Well, the only reason I have a passport.
Are you not allowed to leave?
The only reason I have a passport is because I was scared the Cubs might end up playing Toronto in the World Series one of their years. So,
wow.
Yeah. So I've never been out of the country.
You know, Kevin just went to Turks and Caicos, and that was his first trip out of the country.
Oh, yeah?
That's incredible.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one. I felt bad about it.
Well, now you are.
Yeah. I am not worldly, so London is it. Yep.
Nepotism baby. I love that. I love that moniker for the coach of the 49ers. Listen,
you
Peter
could use
King,
that for anybody that didn't actually earn anything in life.
Peter King has been getting all hot and bothered over John Lynch going all the way back to the Tampa Bay Bucs days. Like, I mean, I love reading Peter King. We've all read Peter King for forever, right? Lynch was as a player. When the Bucks were fantastic, he was always quoted. He was like his go-to guy. He gave him all that access. It's just a tip of the cap. And listen, we're talking about it. Peter King wins. We're talking about. You know who I don't get, and I know Mully's one of your guys, and he seems like a nice. I don't get this national love affair with the Colts. I just can't. The Colts.
Did you see their draft?
Did you see the way they drafted?
The Colts.
Did you see who they drafted last year?
Yeah.
You know, Ulysses S. Grant is the quarterback still, and I just
and he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
Okay. I'd take him over
the
Mitch
defense
too.
Defense is I don't they just
what,
you
did
know,
you say no?
They're okay. They're the third best team
you would
in the
take,
NFL.
You
tomorrow's
take
5-5. Tomorrow's 5-5. Who would you rather have? Chris Ballard and Frank Reich or Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace?
Ooh.
I answer it right now.
Matt well, Nagy save it for
Pace.
No, you didn't save
oh,
it.
There
damn
God.
It.
There it
goes. You ruined tomorrow's 5-5.
Scratch that. Yep.
Also, you're rude.
I'm not coming back
and
tomorrow.
And you're rude today's. Grody, throw me off.
Screw this.
I ruin every day that ends in Y, Mully.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a question we're going to ask management here today.
Is John Beilein's decision to bolt Michigan for the Cleveland Cavaliers more disheartening for college basketball or encouraging for the NBA?
All right, in the interest of time, we're going to look at the John Beilein thing as a positive. They can find another good coach at Michigan. Michigan does things the right way by all accounts. They have really taken a step under John Beilein. He is good for the game. He is good for the Big Ten, but he's gone. And he's going to be good for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know that he'll have the same effect on the Cavaliers that Brad Stevens did on the Boston Celtics, but he's got a shot because of the way he plays, because of the kind of guy that he is. So I think this is a gain for the NBA. and I'm more encouraged for the league than I am disheartened for college basketball.
It is more disheartening for college basketball than encouraging for the NBA, because college basketball is in the midst of another scandal, and to have a good guy leave is a bad thing. To have a guy who is kind of above reproach with a lot of the ways that he's operated, to have him bolt to the NBA at age 66 when it's going to take him a year or two to figure out the league, and it's going to take a year or two to figure out his team. So it's just a weird thing for me to see him do it. It must be a money grab. I don't know if he always wanted to do it, but unless they figure out how to get the Florida coach out of Oklahoma City, Billy Donovan, I don't think that this is a boon for the for college basketball.
Texas coach out of Lubbock, Texas. That'd be a good
move for them. Is
that Shaka?
Who's that?
Chris Beard.
Oh, Chris Beard. I'm sorry.
I think there's been enough busts from college to the NBA that this is not encouraging for the NBA. So yeah, I think that this is bad for college basketball, though, to lose John Beilein, a guy that everybody's heard of at Michigan, and it's something feels right when Michigan is good in college basketball.
Yeah, I think it is good for Cleveland. You know, he's a good offensive mind. He's going to instill a culture, whatever that means anymore, that they're looking for there, but they keep mentioning the culture. And it's bad for college basketball, and specifically, it's bad for the Big Ten, which is what we care about most here. I would like to think that that's true. And you're right. There is just something about Michigan basketball. You know, it is one of those sort of blue blood programs that you don't mind. I personally don't mind seeing them in it every single year. So it's bad for the Big Ten specifically, which I do not like.
There'll be a lot of qualified coaches, though, making a beeline for Ann Arbor.
Oh,
see what he did there? You know, it's best for John Beilein. That's who's the winner in all of this, is John
Beilein.
He's got to be making $5 or $6 million a year for 5 years at the age of 66, staying at Four Seasons every night. You know, not a bad big gig. I don't care about how tiring it is to fly on a private jet. I want to experience it, and I'll report back in a year if it was tiring or not. I think it's bad for college basketball. A guy like this, he is everything that's good about college basketball, despite the fact that he's at Michigan. So it's bad for college basketball.
That's a hard question to ask.
It's a pretty important question to answer, though.
This segment is brought to you by the Illinois Conservation Police Training Program. Are you looking for a rewarding career in law enforcement and love the outdoors? The Illinois Conservation Police will be holding testing for their next class of recruits in early June. To apply or for more information, visit conservationpolice.illinois.gov. Do you have any gut feeling about whether or not the Bulls are going to get lucky in the NBA draft lottery? Are they due for a break? And if they don't have the first or second pick, will their 2018 season be a bust?
I have a gut feeling that they're not going to get lucky. In other words, they won't have one of the first two picks in the draft. And they are definitely due for a break. Somebody is going to break an elbow or a leg, or if this keeps up. If they don't have the first or second pick, then yeah. Then the 2018 season was a complete washout because they didn't win. By the end of the year, they didn't have anybody turning up. We never saw the core play together, and the payoff is another seven-round pick. I mean, a seventh overall pick. It's essential they get number one or number two. I just don't have the feeling it's going to happen. I hate to say it.
I am not feeling it. I don't have that vibe. I don't have that lucky feel. I didn't wake up this morning. Mark Grody is here for good luck. I assume that's why, because he brought the Cubs a World Series. The Bears 12-4, and he's here because he wants to win the draft lottery for the Bulls.
Yep.
Not going to happen, though, Grody. Just not feeling it. Maybe it's the Cavs. Maybe it's the Knicks. I wrote this morning in the Tribune, brace yourself for disappointment, Bulls fans. If you're expecting one or two, I don't know that you're going to get one or two, but that doesn't mean to me that next year has to be a bust, and it doesn't mean that last year was, because the best you could have done was a 14% chance, and that's not really that great of
last
a chance.
Last year was a bust if they don't get a pick.
Last year was a bust.
Because we never saw their core. We never saw them play together.
Well, the last year was a bust regardless of what happens tonight.
Because see, if they end up with a great player because they couldn't get the core playing, then I'll feel good about
last
year.
It was worth it? You feel better about the injuries? Okay, possibly. But I just don't feel it. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, the Bulls are going to get the number one overall pick.
Nice!
Kevin.
Way to go.
I have no choice. Hoff with the pressure on me. They're getting it. You know what? Actually, they're going to get Zion and they're going to get Ja Morant.
They're going
to find a way to get both of those guys.
Grody magic!
There it is.
Grody Magic. I was going to say they won't get the number one pick. I'm predicting they get the number two pick.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be almost as good. You can get excited for the number two pick that overall.
Would be. Whoever, that would be. Hey, whoever they get will be number two. The way they're
the head coach is a walking peanut M&M, so what can you expect for the upcoming season anyway? I don't think it'll be a bust, but it's going to be a really uphill battle for them with the coach they have.
Join Coach Fitz in the Big Ten West Division and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host the Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. I am predicting, because this is just how I roll, that the Bulls will end up with the third pick in the draft.
That'd be okay.
No, it wouldn't, because now you know who's going one, and you know who's going
Barrett.
Two. Yeah. Who in the wide world of sports is going three?
RJ Barrett.
Yeah, he could shoot.
RJ Barrett would be a good NBA player.
The kid from Vanderbilt?
Darius Garland would be four, possibly.
That's an interesting one.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, because he was hurt. He's semi-local. That would be an interesting.
He comes pre-injured.
I'm still heartily disappointed. You, Kevin, you just ruined that because you said they're going to get the number two pick, and then you said that they couldn't win with the coach. You had to throw that part in.
Can't win with the coach. Celebrate? Can't win with the GM. Can't win with the VP.
Oh boy,
it's a bad operation.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.